Welcome back to Balagan. The justification for the judicial reform of the current coalition is promoting is the lack of governance. But is governance what we are lacking in Israel? To discuss Israel's real challenges and what actions are needed to be taken to strengthen Israeli democracy and improve the public bureaucracy, we have Roy Folkman, a former member of the Knesset of Kulanu Party, a social and a high-tech entrepreneur, and the author of Version Update, New Rules for Israeli Politics, published in 2021 and seems more relevant than ever today. Roy, thank you very much for joining Balagan. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Kobi, for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, Roy, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you published the book eventually.
I live in a small village near Jerusalem. I have four kids, three boys and a very young daughter who was just born recently. I did most of my adult life in the public sphere in some sorts. I think, Kobi, you and I met doing politics in the Hebrew University Student Union, where we established an NGO around attracting young adults to Jerusalem. And then we entered politics. Our first initiative was the student union that usually until your time was between the Labor Party and the Likud Party was divided. And we came as a local independent party. We won the elections for a few years. I was the general manager of the union for a few years. I worked with the mayor of Jerusalem. I helped him get elected in 2009, Ner Barkat. He was a businessman. I worked with him quite a few years.
And he's the current minister of economy.
He's the minister of economics affairs. Yes, in the Likud. We worked for quite a few years together. After he got elected as mayor of Jerusalem, I became his policy advisor and head of strategy for a few years. And then I got a scholarship for Harvard under the Wexner Foundation. And I came to the U.S. for doing my master's degree in the Kennedy School. I was during a PhD in the Hebrew University, but I stopped that. And during that time, I met Moshe Kahlon, the head of that part of the party. I didn't know that I'm going to join politics then. I've decided while I was in Boston that I want to do the transition between the professional level to the political level. I thought that the Israeli challenge is in politics and not in the professional sector. And I told Kahlon, we became good friends, and I told him, listen, he opened a center for financial reforms when he came back. He did a course in the business school. And I told him I want to help him. And I went back to Israel. I quit my job. I became an independent consultant. And I worked with him as a volunteer for a while. And then the government fell. And to my surprise, 45 days before the elections, he told me, Roy, I want you in my ticket. So I told my colleague and partner in the business, he gave me number 9. What are the chances that we'll get 9 seats in the Knesset? I'm very slim. Don't worry. I'm going to for the election for 3 months and I come back to the business. We got 10 seats. And not only that, I became a member of parliament, I became the faction head of the party. And I served for 4.5 years. He was the Ministry of Finance. It was a huge pleasure. We did a lot of reforms in banking, in housing, in any field you want, especially in economic issues. That was my specialty. I quit the Knesset when Kulanu became a part of the Likud. Not because my political opinions are very far from the Likud today, but because I thought I could not serve under Netanyahu. I left politics, and since then I'm an entrepreneur and a policy consultant.
But you still took the time to write a book about public policy.
I wrote quite an elaborate diary while being a parliament member, because I like history, and I think these kind of things are important. And I took the time after finishing my parliamentary role to write what I then thought was the breakdown of the Israeli politics, which is similar to breakdown in other countries, especially the United States, and why I believe democracies needs a version update. This is how I called it. And I didn't know when I wrote it that everything will happen. You know, we'll get into 3 years of political crisis, and then, a very, very radical government will form. I still think that politics is broken and politics is essential, and it needs a version update. And this is why I wrote my book about it.
So before you tell us why do you think that the political system is broken, I want to ask you a straight question. Do you think that we really have a governance issue, a governance problem? The coalition members are always saying, we cannot rule, we cannot set any policy.
First of all, I would say this. There is a governance problem, but it's not because of the technicalities of governance. The main reason that government cannot work for the common good is because of what you see in Israel and you see especially in the United States is about culture wars. It's because politics became mainly a war between camps and not a place where you are being judged by how good policies you advance. So there is a habit in Israel to say that, you know, left-leaning people want policies and right-leaning people want war and identity. So I would say generally voters in Israel and in the United States as well, more and more are all about the war. I can give you an example. I have a neighbor before the elections. I asked him, would you vote for me? And he said, listen, you were a wonderful member of parliament. Your party has helped me a lot. We saved a lot of money because of your reforms, but I won't vote for you. I'll vote for Netanyahu. And I asked why. And he said, because I want someone who will stick it to the leftists. So he said, it's more important for me that there will be someone who will, you know, shove something in their eye or will, you know, attack the other side.
Poke their eye. That's how you say
poke
it.
Poke their eye. More than I want policies, because we were a right-wing party. But based on our attitude towards, you know, the West Bank and our attitude towards the Jewish part of Jewish and state, et cetera, we are a right-wing party and I'm a right-wing politician. But our, you know, sentiment was around common good for everyone. So it's not about being against Arabs or against the left parties or who can we attack. Now, the issue of governance is, of course, an excuse that is being used by populism all over the world, that the reason that we cannot rule is deep state, all professionals, etc. Of course, that is definitely, I was there for many, many years. When you want to move something and make something happen, you can do it. Of course, there is bureaucracy. And of course, there is overregulation that needs to be dealt with. But currently, when you hear the slogan governance, it's all about becoming authoritarian. It means everyone that does not agree with me, all systems in a democracy that are intended to say the system is stronger than the politicians is deep state. And so when you want to dismantle the media, dismantle the judiciary, dismantle the professional service level of professionals, it's all about populism and not about governance.
You can summarize it by what we actually witnessed today. We are recording on August 16th, and just today there was another clash between the police chief of staff and the Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, when the chief of staff said that the Israeli police will stand by the Israeli law in case of a judicial crisis. And the minister who went up to speak right after him said that the police need to make sure that the policy that the government is enacting needs to be ruled or, you know.
No, that you need to abide to the politicians. So
yeah.
I will say, you know, what is happening now in Israel is really unprecedented in the history of Israel, where we are in a days where, and I, you know, sit in I just came today from an interview in one of the television channels in Israel, and the attack on the IDF was, you know, IDF is a consensus in Israel. You never ask yourself, what is the political tendencies of the head of the Israeli military? You never ask that, you know, he's our protector. The head of the senior staff of the Israeli army were saints in Israeli history. Again, as you described about the police chief of staff, is that everyone is being attacked as deep state. So if you say something about a Jewish settler who was involved in a shooting, you are leftist. And if you are not breaking the legs of demonstrators, then you are deep state. And so everything is only being criticized. Are you a part of my camp? Now, I told a few of the people I debated with them on television today, do we want to choose our heads of the military based on the party that they belong to? So if Likud is the main party and that's their own, the sentiment that was in the discussion with me on television today was, they don't choose our people to the military. And I asked them, do you really want to say that the Israeli pilots, the best in the world, will be chosen by their affiliation to the Likud? So if you will ask me who I voted for, and then you say, yes, you can become a pilot. Now, that kind of things happen in third world countries, of course. All senior officials in every branches of government are only being elected as they're close to the head of the state, the autocrat. This is the sentiment now in Israel, unfortunately. And that is really the breakdown of the system.
Yeah, I think that former President Rivlin spoke about the four tribes. We can actually say that in theory, you have five tribes. And when you look at Israel today, it looks like it's broken to a lot more tribes. But you're bringing is a point that the Likud was always bringing up as a part for them being the real representatives of the what you call the Mizrahim or the Sephardic Jews. And they were always saying that they're discriminated.
Let me be clear, because I was a part of a party that 80% were Sephardic who voted for. And I am now I'm sitting in the Board of Higher Education in Israel, and I'm fighting for the heritage of the Sephardic Jews in the Israeli academia. I'm completely in agreement with saying that there was and there is a discrimination. But in order to fix discrimination, we need not to break down around political affiliation, but around saying everyone in Israel can advance based on his abilities, especially in professional jobs. You know, the head of the Israeli army, I want the best of the best. Exactly. It doesn't matter if Sephardic or Ashkenazi, rich or poor, I want the best of the best. And I definitely would not care if he votes for Yesh Atid or Likud or Shas. I don't care. And we should not care. So there is a huge difference between talking about the tribes, okay? So I will choose the head of a hospital. He could be Arab. He could be someone from a small town in the south. He can be Sephardic. He can be Ashkenazi. It doesn't matter. We need to allow everyone to join the elite, okay? The elite of professions. And I write in my book that there is an elite of connections and discrimination, and there is an elite of talent, okay? Not everyone can be head of universities. Not everyone can be head of the big companies. Not everyone can be the chief of staff of the Israeli army. These are the elite of professions.
But not everybody can be a pilot.
Exactly. So it's okay that we have the best of the best in those jobs, but it cannot be decided based on party affiliation. And you see that as well in the States. You will choose people only if they are Democrat or Republican. And it's ridiculous because if I come to a hospital, I don't care if the head of the hospital is Democrat or Republican. I want a good head of hospital. I want a good doctor. I want a good head of chief of staff. Even your Supreme Court, you know, but we see the damage being done in the United States where you take a Supreme Court and make it completely political. So is it a Republican Supreme Court or a Democrat? And it's not about, is it a good Supreme Court? It's about a political. So that's the breakdown of the system.
I completely agree. I mean, some of the justifications that I hear from right-wingers in the States is actually our Supreme Court, the judges are being elected by the political system. And then I'm telling them, okay, and does it work for you? That they're, you know, that they're completely...
By the way, it's broken from all sides because when Roe versus Wade was passed in the original, it was a sin already because it was decided by a Democratic leaning, I think it was Supreme a false Court. Intervention from the beginning. But we see what will happen when the idea of a professional state, but when you say there is politics, but below that, today I was attacked in television around how lefties or unloyal is the head of the Israeli Central Bank. And I said, how crazy are you? Why would we need the head of the Israeli Central Bank? People, you know, top level in the world, like Stanley Fisher, were the best of the best in the world. Would you really want to ask Dr. Fisher, are you voting for Netanyahu? Because if not, you would not be the head of the Israeli National Bank. It's crazy. The head of the National Bank in Israel will be elected by his affiliation to a party. That's the breakdown of the system. And it's all about populism.
Do you think it's a new phenomena? If we'll talk about it, let's be sincere. You always had corruption in politics, you know, not to this extent. But in 1977, by the way, when the Labour Party, at that time it was Mapai, were removed from power by the Likud, by Machal, Menachem Begin, one of the slogans was Mushchatim Abayta, corrupt government, go home.
First of all, definitely in the establishment of Israel in the 50s and 60s, definitely we were in the same kind of political affiliation, kind of governance, okay? Where you would become a head of a university only if you belong to the right party. That's or even a lecturer. I'm not saying it was great in the 50s and 60s. It took us many years to develop a system that became more and more professional. And the challenges that the modern state faces, any state, but Israel in social issues, security issues, in health issues, in business and technological issues, the world is becoming more and more complicated. And in order to face that, we need professional, top talent people in government. Now, we don't want to return to the good old days of the 50s and reinate them in 2023. We want to say, listen, Roy, you want to do your, to become a passionate about the public work and become a head of the Ministry of Economics, Economic Affairs in Israel. We want to choose you because you're the best in what you do and not because it's all about what politics you believe in. So a modern state that, and we see it, by the way, in this government, a lot of, and why an example is that there are no women in the head of, it's just amazing. There are no women, one woman.
As CEOs.
As a CEO of an Israeli ministry, only one, which is on a very, very, very small office. No women. So do you really say that Israel, that Zionism, it says always that women are equal and women are a huge talent pool and part of Israeli success in the history is the integration of women in all branches of society. So the government in 2023 says, we'll bring the best and the brightest to govern, but there are no women here. So it will deteriorate the level of management. So you asked about history. There was a political tendency of not the best and the brightest, but only the best connected in the past. We got out of it for many, many years, and the political level in Israel improved dramatically. And now we are returning everything back to, by the way, you see it in today in Israel, in Arab villages, where one family is getting elected, all other family, or the other family is being discharged from all positions in the local authority, and they don't pay taxes. So do we really want it to say, listen, this Ministry of Education is the Ministry of Education of the Likud. And by the way, their seat is already saying that we will not abide to any rules coming from the Ministry of Education of Israel. We don't care what we'll say because they're not our Ministry of Education. Do we really want to go there? For example, maybe the next step will be, this is not our army. This is the army of the Likud. So if only the Likud rules the armies, then we will not send our, if we don't vote Likud, we don't send our kids. This is the breakdown of Israel. And that's what's happening now in Israel, in Israeli politics.
And by the way, after we slammed Mapai, I will say on their defense, that yes, they put people that were from our people, as you can say it, you know, Mapai people, but they did put more qualified people than just, he's my friend and so, I'm going to put him as a...
So here, Kobi, I know that your origins from, you know, the Labour Party.
And I'm not hiding it.
I know. I'm not saying you are, but I will push back. I don't think it matters. And I will definitely not say
that
Mapai people were talented and Likud people are not talented. I don't think that at all. I think...
No, I didn't say that.
No, but you said they did choose the people that are affiliated, but they chose good people. So I'm saying it's not about good or bad people. It's about the system. If instead of attracting the best and the brightest based on talent to government position, and I'm not saying political positions, but I'm saying government position.
Yeah, professional.
And the only criteria will become affiliation to the political level. I will only put in positions people that are loyal to me. That's good for, I don't want to insult countries, but that's good for third world countries that are not democratic, or even if they call themselves democratic, they are failed countries. Because I know a few countries in South America, for example, that call themselves democracies. But I met some of those people in my time in Harvard, and they told me when you get elected, you get an Excel after you get elected with a few hundred people that need to be appointed. And a friend of mine that I met there said, I asked, where should they come? What are their skills? And say, it doesn't matter. You know, you can put them in any job you want. It doesn't matter. It only matters they are party people. So put them wherever you want. It doesn't matter in any position you want. This is how we want to manage a modern country, by putting people only based on political affiliation. That's the breakdown of any successful country.
Of course, I agree. Some of our neighbors are actually successful democracies, like Syria and Iraq. That
of course, that's the same. That's even more radical.
Or Lebanon, that has a great system.
Definitely. That's definitely, and especially, and again, I want to emphasize it, Kobi. There are a huge, great talent in Israel, and I take part in many leadership programs in order to attract people to the government sector, and. For many years, that you know, we knew we attracted good people to the military, we attract good people to business and high tech. And we worked very hard for many years to say there is a huge challenge in modern public work. As I said, the world is getting more complicated, the challenges are complicated. And if you are very talented, you can choose high tech. But I would say it's more interesting to work in the Ministry of Education, the Ministry, it's more interesting than I don't know, working in some selling some product, a high-tech product, okay? I would say it's more interesting, but it will never be, and I can tell you the same in the municipality of Jerusalem. When we came there, when managers knew that the only criteria to make decisions is political, why would a good person would come and work there if they will know that any professional work they will do will be disregarded? So if you want good people, talented people, to come and take part. Now, what I'm trying to explain to my friends in the Likud is that, listen, if you will attack, and I told that today in the broadcast, everyone is being attacked. All positions now, the head of the police, the head of the military, the senior staff in the military, the head of the central bank, all positions, the head of the national, the government, national companies authority, everyone is being attacked. And you see the same, by the way, in the US. Everyone is deep state. Everyone that doesn't do anything we believe in the media or in the, and that's populism. It's about authoritarian. It's about you can't trust anyone, only me, your leader. That's the story, unfortunately, of populism. And we are going to fast track there. The US is already way, way there, but Israel is more fragile than the US, unfortunately, in that aspect.
I think that the American system has stronger foundations and a lot more checks and balances than the Israeli system. Talking about how you enact a law in Israel and the judicial reform, you are a member of the Knesset. Let's talk about normal legislation versus what happened in the past couple of months when a member of the Knesset, Simcha Rotman, the head of the Judicial Committee, was promoting the discussions. So usually when you have a legislation, you will come as a member of the Knesset or the head of the committee, or actually as the government, sometimes the executive is actually offering to enact a law. And what happens then?
I would say two things why I agree that there are less checks and balances. First of all, Israel does not have a constitution, and any law could be called as part of like foundation law, which is like the ongoing constitution, but it's a regular legislation. You just put a slogan on it that it's a foundation law. Anyone can vote.
It's a basic law.
A basic law, et cetera. And we change those laws in the highest frequency in any parliament in the world, which means that we can cancel elections. Anything can be changed easily. The second is that...
With a regular majority. You don't even need a majority, special majority.
With no special majority, no special process and anything. So you can cancel elections in Israel, for example, and become a dictatorship in a regular vote. So the Israeli basic laws are very, very fragile and are being changed very often. And the second is that the executive branch is controlling the parliament. And so there are no checks and balances. And you see, and I told Rotman, I'm in good terms with him. And I came to the Judiciary Committee. He gave me a time to speak and I spoke there. But I saw there was no discussion. I was a part of passing the Chok HaLeom, the nation state bill.
Nation state.
In my turn. And I...
In 2018, right?
2018. And I thought, and you know, it was quite a lot of work doing that legislation. And I had led that out of my party. And we were very important members in the legislation of that law. And there was a serious discussion because we argued on various terms. I can tell you something that I heard in the Knesset. And it's a very frightening thing that I've heard during the last legislations in Israel, in the judiciary reform. I heard from a prominent member of coalition saying, Roy, you know what our problem is? Our problem is we can pass anything we want with no discussion, meaning that no one within the coalition debates. Okay, in our time, we debated because there was a few opinions and we debated on how to pass a smart law, definitely if it's a basic law. Now, there is no discussion. It's like passing the Israeli constitution with no discussion. You won't find in the debates any coalition members that have any opinion on things that needs to be adjusted. And the opposition is completely disregarded. So the frightening thing, and I heard it from a coalition member saying to me, listen, Roy, we can bring anything as radical as we want and it will pass. And by the way, that's what happened now with the last legislation.
Yes.
So the frightening thing is that you see a parliament that has no checks and balances, no discussion, no saying, you know, we discussed the legislation, we adjusted, we fixed it, we did this, we brought something that was debated. And this is now how the foundations of the Israeli parliamentary and legal systems are being discussed with no discussion, just passing the most radical opinions that, and I also know that they brought to the table the most radical versions of the legislation and it passed. There is no discussion whatsoever in the parliament. There are some other forces discussing stuff, but in the parliament, no discussion. And that is, I cannot imagine something more broken than the process in which the legislation is being processed now. It's just about, we were elected. The only thing that is important is that we have the majority. The only thing that is, and I heard it again in the studio today, the only thing that is important is majority. And
yeah, majority of course, rules.
Anyone that understands democracy understands that majority rule is only one aspect of a healthy democracy. It's about debate. It's about creating consensus. It's about, of course, the balance of powers. It's about, you know, rights to, we don't disregard minorities or those that exactly. lost because I have majority, of course. So there are a few aspects of a good democracy and a good democratic system. Now it's all about, if I'm winning, I can crush you. And now it's not about, you know, Jabotinsky has once said, the art of democracy is the art of compromise. Now, in many Western political systems, compromise is unthinkable. Unthinkable. It's like, you can't compromise on anything. And it's all about crushing your opponent. So usually what is happening is it's more important for us to create pain to the other side than to look for common good. By the way, you see it every day in the United States. This is where Israel is now 100%. It's all about crushing the other side. It was never the ethos of the Israeli society. It was always, we have our disagreements, but eventually we are here together. Okay, we need to fight together. In the army, we die together. It doesn't matter if you're a leftist or a rightist, a Likud or a Labor. It doesn't matter. We fight together. We pay taxes together. We build this country together. We live in the same cities together. And this is breaking.
So now that we brought up all of these problems and all of these challenges, your book actually provides solutions. So I want to ask you, you know, if you can tell us a little bit about the solutions and also how do you think we can bring those solutions to Israel? Because eventually it seems like the system is so broken up that one side is, I will say, shikor mikoch. I forgot how it's called in
English.
Yeah,
it's drunk with power.
Drunk with power, but yeah. And it's like they're literally, I would say, grab as they can, as much as they can.
Yeah.
And the other side, if I'll talk, I'll split it to politically and to the people that are rallying in the streets, because politically it doesn't seem that the opposition exists. And I'm going to have a different episode about that, what's happening with the opposition. How do you think we can glue everything back together? What do we need to do in order to glue it together?
So I would briefly, you know, touch on two points. I don't have a silver bullet. If I had, I would do it, but I don't have a silver bullet. But I would say this. First of all, it needs to be fixed from within politics. So I push, and especially in the right, I would say pragmatic people, and part of what I'm looking for is pragmatic, pragmatist politics to right-wingers that are becoming more and more frightened from politics because they say it's only a place where you find less qualified people, people that are all about bullying and becoming about war cultures, etc., which it creates an environment that many serious people do not want to take part in. So first of all, I'm saying what's happening now in Israel needs to come with the fixing within politics. So pragmatist politicians and people that can break the essence of culture wars, it needs about joining politics and becoming politicians. So that's one way to fix it. And it will happen because there will be a backlash to a government. By the way, the two last governments, and especially this one, it is all the time about fighting. So there needs to be a fixing of it. But there is a much deeper process needs to be done. I'm now working with the Museum of Tolerance in Jerusalem about the education program. And I think there is a very deep process needs to be fixed within the Israeli society and politics. By the way, it's the same issue in the United States as well. And it's both about something that the Jewish history has taught us about the Beit HaMidrash. How do we deal with controversy? Okay. There are skills needs to be taught about compromise and understanding. And that's about dealing with journalists, teachers, students, young adults. It needs to be a huge effort of education and process about working together. And I think, you know, Israel has a lot, the Jewish history has a lot to teach about that. And the second part is about identities. I think what is breaking in Israel now is we see identity is something around a package deal. Okay. So if I'm a right-wing voter, I need to be religious and less liberal about, and I need to be against the judiciary system. There is a package deal. And that's not the case. I'm not a coalition supporter, but I'm a right wing on many aspects. If you would ask around that, I will be a right wing politician in Israel, or I would be accounted like that. And so we do need to create new breakdowns of these identity packages. I was a part of a party that broke those package deals because the head of my party was a former Likudnik. He came with an agenda of economic reforms and not about cultural wars. So I think the essence of repair needs to come from politics, but we do need to create a lot of work around media and education in order to break in any means possible the identity packages that support cultural wars. It's not about I am a Republican or a Democrat, and if I am a Republican, that this is a package deal and I'm all against you. This is on the outskirts of the parties. On 80% or 90% of things we can find, you know, maybe I will disagree with you on abortion, but I can agree with you on education. Maybe I can disagree with you on education, but we can agree on Ukraine. Maybe you can agree on Ukraine, but we do want to invest in urban renewal. It doesn't matter, but it doesn't need to be a package deal. And I think that's something that needs to come from a lot of work around that we're already starting to do in Israel now. We'll need to reinvent, and also, by the way, reinvent media, and we're working on it.
First thing I gotta say that I think that your book should be translated into English as well, because it has a lot of relevant.
So thank you for your your support. Points. I would say, Kobi, that I didn't do a lot of work, but I did address one fund to ask for the sponsor the translation, and they didn't approve it. I didn't have the time to look for funding for translation. It's not a big deal, but I could not sponsor it myself. I thought about it, and maybe in the future I'll find a way to translate it.
You said the past two governments, and I wasn't a big fan of the what's called the change block. I thought that it's a lot better to have somebody else than Netanyahu as a prime minister. But I actually think that the previous coalition was trying, as I would say, to work for the people. While the opposition, led by Netanyahu at that time, was like, it's either us or them. And they were actually trying to break the rules of the game. On the other hand, Netanyahu and his people are saying, when you are eliminating Netanyahu or unwilling to sit with Netanyahu, you are literally saying no to the Likud party. You are saying no to us, not just to him. What do you have to say about that?
I definitely don't want to get into remarks again about one camp or the other camp, whether they were better or they were worse. They will tell you, and you know, all the current coalition will tell you that doing what you call the change government, they put aside a huge chunk of the Israeli society, especially the Haredi, but not only, and disregarded them and passed rules against them, and they failed attack. So the main point is, or the main sin, and by the way, the creator of that politically is Netanyahu, is the what we call in the Israeli politics the blocks. So you can see, for example, why the Israeli Sephardic Israelis, yes, Masorti, traditional, usually are moderates, especially in issues of state and religion. You know, people that come from a traditional home are quite liberal with regards to religion. They will go to a synagogue in Shabbat and then go to a football match. Okay.
Yeah, I was like that.
Exactly. Okay. So you know that. And so the connection between moderate traditional Mizrahi Sephardic Jews and highly extremist ultra-Orthodox, which are a very strong power now in the coalition, is not meant to be, okay? But the creation of blocks, and that was the, I think, the essence of ingenuity for Netanyahu, saying, we need to stick together. So those groups became, you know, one package deal, and it became a legitimization to the extremists, because most of the Likud voters are not extremists. But their only option was, first of all, if I will support a coalition with other parts of the parliament, then I'm a leftist. If I'm not against Arabs, I'm a leftist. So I need to support the most radical, radical ultra-Orthodox from the settlers. They, by the way, the Ben-Gvir and Smotrich do not represent the modern Orthodox community. Many people there say they are way too extreme for us. Okay, and Smotrich is my friend, but he's a smart guy. I know to acknowledge his talent, but he's an extremist. By the way, that's again the story of what's happening in Israel. It's the same in the States. Why the system is broken? Because extremists that should have less power to influence what is happening in the Israeli politics as well become the major players, and that is the tragedy. Instead of saying, listen, let's put the extremist, what we call in our history, the Kanaim, let's put them on the sidelines and work with the moderates, we create politics of extremists. There is only base. And that's what is now in the US. It's only about the extremists. By the way, the extremists, again, in the US are not 80% of the voters. But the politics became only about these extremists. And so it's becoming very hard. We need to break. And by the way, that was again the failure of the last government as well. It was again playing within the packages. They did not break that. They did not find a way to create new coalitions and new partners. And that was their sin. And we are paying that with a huge debt now, when the most extremist government in the history of Israel is now in ruling.
Now you're mentioning Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. And it is an interesting story on what happened to the hypen, as called the religious Zionism in Israel, was the connecting hypen between Jewish and democratic state.
Again, it's about groups that instead of finding moderation and connection and finding the common good became more and more extremist and more into culture wars. It's not about, okay, let's advance our policies. We want to strengthen the settlements in the West Bank and all of that I can support. But it's about being the most extreme section of our group. It's about attacking, becoming the other side is not the issue of a broken politics is that the other side is illegitimate. And it's not about, okay, maybe I don't agree with you on one aspect, but we can collaborate on another. That's a healthy political system, okay? There is a climate crisis, okay? So I don't care what's your opinion on abortions, but maybe we can collaborate on the catastrophe being happening in Hawaii and find together a way to make things that such tragedy will not happen again. And I don't care what is your opinion about abortions, but because it's all about liberalism and conservatism, which again, it's the bullshit of populism. It's all about saying, don't trust anyone, only trust me. That's the essence of populism. There is only one leader. He will always try to say, this is my camp, these are the enemy. Now in the US, it's more logical because it's such a huge country saying, you know, they are our enemy. We have nothing in common with these people. But when that tradition, and I want to say something a bit even harsher, it's being sponsored by millions of dollars coming from the United States, importing to Israel or exporting from the United States this notion of cultural wars.
Are you talking about the Tikva Fund and Kohelet?
I'm talking about many organizations. This is one of them that imports culture war politics to Israel. And while in the US, I can understand why in a huge country, people can say, well, we have nothing in common with that group. When it comes to Israel, when people say, we have nothing in common between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and that is what is being said. Now people are talking about separation between Israel and Judea. And that we will not let these people enter our places, and we will not let... And what is amazing, because in the Jewish history, we lost one state when it became, you know, Israel and Judea.
Yeah.
And our sovereignty crumbled because of that. And now it's like unbelievably creepy how similar it is, where we become so entrenched in our culture. So what is possible, maybe? By the way, I think the American democracy is in terrible crisis. But what is possible in the United States will destroy Israel. And by the way, we see that. I have a neighbor here who is a fighter jet pilot. And he tells me what's happening. And it's unthinkable, because this is the Israeli Air Force. You know, it's the places of excellence in the Israeli society, these places of huge excellence in the Israeli society. And it's breaking. It's breaking because people say, listen, when we express our difficulties, we are being colored as traitors. And if there will be a culture war here, we will go away. And you cannot say, well, now let's choose only Likudniks as pilots. You know, I heard a few very smart parliament members saying, well, no problem. Let's now it will take us. And I don't want to talk about numbers, and I don't want to, you know, say a little bit data that I know about what's happening. Of course, it's still in the beginning, and the Israeli army is in capacity and everything. But this kind of breakdown of culture war type of society that can maybe sustain in the US will
cannot
be the
sustain
end
in Israel.
Cannot sustain. And that is the tragedy, that we have politicians that does not understand that, and we not have enough civic society force to fight that. We need to find forces from both sides of the aisle and a lot of funding to tackle culture wars, by the way, in the US. And it needs to be delegitimized, you know, saying that culture wars politicians need to be shunned out. It's to be a huge power saying, if that's the only thing you want to offer me is a culture war politics, I don't want you. It doesn't matter if I'm a Democrat or a Republican. I want people who are trying to find solutions to our problems as a society. I want politicians that are looking for compromise. I want politicians that understand that coalition building is the essence. It's like saying, listen, I'm an engineer, but I'm against mathematics. I don't know. It's like saying that a politician does not agree in a compromise is, again, this is the essence of the professions. The only thing I was taught when I became a politician, saying, you know, it's the art of coalition building. And I was considered fairly successful in passing legislation. And the only good things I knew how to do is creating coalitions around my... I passed 14 bills in the Israeli parliament. Some of them were very complicated. And I built coalitions. And that's the job of a politician. So if a politician doesn't do that, he doesn't do his job.
Yeah, so we definitely need decent politicians. We need good people in the system. And we also need the people to support them and not to shy away from politics. And I will say that we need the media to support not the loudest voice in the room and not the populist, but to do its work and to provide a stage for also the common and more boring politicians who come to work.
That's, I think it's debated a lot, why media, but again, it's only, I think, the symptoms. I think media as well is a process where it reflects the general, you know, echo chambers kind of politics. And that is discussed quite a lot. I don't think I have a lot to contribute. I think we are here to, you know, maybe bring some new information on what's happening now in Israel politics. I think what you're talking about the media is, of course, true. And I think it's been very fairly discussed in the US. I read some material and I can say that I see a lot of discussion around that in the US as well.
It's one of the biggest challenges of democracies today. Definitely. And overall, by the way, in Europe, the same thing. You can see the uprise of populist leaders in West Europe. In a way, you can say that Western democracy is now under attack of populist leader.
So I said just one part, because I was the head of a committee by the former head of Minister of Communication around Israeli media reform. And I would just say this with regard, and we did a lot about economic issues, the entry of Netflix and, you know, Amazon Prime and all sorts of economic models. So I would say, first of all, there is a breakdown of the economic model of journalism. Because journalism became harder to sustain economically, the level of journalism became lower in many aspects. The citizens could not demand that. So you see people in media that has no ability whatsoever with regards to journalism, but we don't know what journalism is. So we do talk now in the Museum of Tolerance about a media literacy center around tolerance, because there are a few countries that already operated on it. While I was a politician, I wrote a small flyer to high school students, and it was like a joke, but it became serious. And I wrote it, "How do you know when a politician lies?" Because I did a lot of events in schools. And I asked some of this students, "How do you know that I'm not lying to you? What is the process that when you hear me talking about issues or politics or whatever, and you hear me, you hear others, how do you know that we are not full of bullshit? How do you know that? What kind of process can you do?" So I wrote like a small guidelines for high school students, how to know when a politician lies. And I wrote part of it in the book, but I said, we need to teach media literacy, because any person with a Facebook page calls himself a journalist, which is, of course, yeah, we know that a lot of that is fake. Facebook, by the way, was very angry against me, because I dealt quite a lot with Facebook and Google. And I said, 90%, in one interview conventions, 90% of what you read in Facebook is a lie, because you cannot know what are the interests. So if I write something personally about my family, okay, it could be good. But if I write something about politics, and by the way, I'm supporting a politician in a woman running for governor in our, or municipal level, governor, not the governor, but like the municipal head in our, it's not a municipality, it's a region. So, because, and I support, so how do you know that when people write something, it's not based on interests or lies? Where do you know that there's a level of quality? So we do have a challenge of how to educate people of consumption of quality journalism, okay, and not just bullshit. And media and journalism became more and more bullshit oriented and not quality oriented. That's again a challenge, and there is quite interesting work that being done in a few countries in the world. I think Finland is very advanced, and we are now studying that in Israel as well.
Well, I wanted to say, I want to be minded of time. We're already talking for an hour. I mean, I haven't. Time flies when you're enjoying, and I really have great time talking to you. So I want to let you finish with one last message to our audience. English speakers who are interested about Israel, and a lot of them are concerned with what's happening in Israel. Give us something for them to be optimistic about, or how they can help strengthen Israel's democracy.
It's a good point, Kobi. So first of all, I do want to emphasize the sense of urgency. We are the startup nation. We are great in innovation. I think that as the crisis in Israel now deepens, we can also be the place where creativity and the Jewish history, because we are, I think, one of the only ancient societies in the world that has such a strong historical understanding what controversy and lack of ability to contain controversy creates. And so, first of all, I'm optimistic on Israeli and Jewish ingenuity and ability to find solutions. I do want to say, first of all, to people who care about Israel, that first of all, these are very difficult and risky days. I cannot overstate that. And we need to invest heavily in repairing the system, but only in the manner that is tackling the essence of culture wars and populism. We need to be very, very, to create this ability within us to spot toxic ideas and toxic leaders. And it's not that difficult. And I think if enough people who care about Israel, first of all, we understand they need to be involved. And by the way, I say to liberals or to anyone who cares about, usually the extremists are more involved. What is happening now, and is a bit optimistic in Israel, and I'm not pro all the demonstration and everything. I have, you know, some of them are way too left for my taste, but people understand that politics matters and the system matters. I think there is an awakening And I'm saying the same to your audience. Listen, we are living in historic times and in difficult times in the history of democracy and the history of Israel. And you need to be involved. And we need to understand the essence of pragmatism and compromise and coalition building. And if you have that, be involved. Be involved. You can be more conservative and more liberal, more leftist and more right-wing. I don't care. Be involved by bringing moderation and compromise and pragmatism to politics from both sides of the aisle. And this is our calling. This is our generation, Kobe. You were a politician, you know, local, you know, in your in your days, you are doing what you can now with your podcast and other things you do. Sometimes I want to go out of all of that. And I come so depressed from some of those debates in the media. But unfortunately, I owe that to my kids. And all of your listeners owe that to their kids if they care about Israel. So thank you for having me. And, you know, I'm be happy to take part in any process of fixing the system.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you very much. I really hope that one day you will return to the Knesset, because you are actually one of the best MKs that we had in the past couple of years. We do have a lot more other members of the Knesset that are great civil servants, I will say. But sadly, as
well. About them, not about me. And I just would say that my wife is very against, you know, she had very, very difficult 4.5 years while I was there. But, you know, I'll do what I can from any position I will be take part in. So thank you very much, Kobe.
Thank you, Roy. And thank you very much, everybody, for joining us again on another great episode. Until next time.
If you found this episode enlightening or thought-provoking, be sure to subscribe to Balagan on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And hey, if you're feeling extra generous, leave me a review. Your feedback means the world to me and helps others to discover the show. Of course, sharing the episode link with others will also be greatly appreciated. Remember, the conversation doesn't have to stop here. Join me on Balagan's Facebook group to continue discussing today's episode and connect with fellow listeners. I would love to hear your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for future topics. You are more than welcome to check my website, www.balaganil.com, for additional resources. I'm committed to connecting you with Israel and providing you with proper context. Until the next time, remember that knowledge is power. Keep learning, keep growing, and continue engaging with Israel. I can't wait to catch you in the next episode of Balagan.